What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Ulta Beauty CEO Mary Dillon. After transforming the beauty business and leading her company through the depths of the pandemic, she's stepping down. Her exit interview.
Well, I think the shopper for beauty has learned about self-care, learned about clean and organic ingredients, as well as, you know, trying new routines for above the mask, and we continue to see that growing.
Dillon's announcement and her leadership legacy in a conversation with Becky Quick that you'll hear only on this podcast.
It's just a phenomenal story of what she's been able to do. She started spending money on advertising because when she got there, people used to call it Ultra. I did too.
And remember, makeup can be for everyone.
C6, MAC C6. That's my color.
Beauty tips, plus the markets react to comments from the Fed, crypto disclosures on your tax returns, and what's your proudest quarantine purchase?
A pizza stone. Pizza stone. It makes real pizza. It's not like crappy homemade pizza.
Thank you, Chef Joe.
It's Thursday, March 18th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up on the podcast, the Federal Reserve bolstered markets yesterday, ramping up expectations for economic growth and indicating no interest rate hikes likely through 2023. Here's Chairman Jay Powell in Wednesday's virtual press conference.
Today, the FOMC kept interest rates near zero and maintained our sizable asset purchases. These measures, along with our strong guidance on interest rates and on our balance sheet, will ensure that monetary policy will continue to deliver powerful support to the economy until the recovery is complete.
The Dow closed above 33,000 for the first time on this good news. The Fed is projecting 6.5% GDP growth in this year, as well as an unemployment rate closer to 4.5%. Investors were watching this forecast really closely, anticipating how the Fed would balance expected growth as the economy reopens more broadly with fears of inflation. It's a bit of a tightrope walk. Government bond yields have surged to levels last seen before the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, inflation is bad for bonds, as it means future interest payments for holding the bonds are worth less. Rising yields mean falling prices. Here's Chairman Powell's somewhat cryptic response to a question from our own Steve Leisman about where bond rates would have to be to make him worry.
I would be concerned by disorderly conditions in markets or by a persistent tightening of financial conditions that threaten the achievement of our goals. We think the stance of monetary policy remains appropriate. Our guidance on the federal funds rate and on asset purchases is providing strong support for the economy, and we're committed to maintaining that patiently accommodative stance until the job is well and truly done.
Game on, with the Fed saying that they're going to basically keep on inflation, to keep watching this and keep buying things for now, keep from raising rates at least through 2023. Also, let's take a look at the Squawk stack. This is the one every day. What do we put in? What do we put out? I guess you got to keep the 10-year in there this time around, guys. The Dow futures, the NASDAQ futures, the 10-year, Bitcoin and GameStop. Any recommendations for what we should do?
We're alternating GameStop and AMC. AMC, GameStop, there's news on AMC, so we're switching. But the Dow went over 33,000, so we definitely need that. The NASDAQ yesterday had a horrible early session. Remember, we were talking about it, and then during the session, it was down like 200 points, and then it responded to the Powell comments along with everything else and turned positive, but it's given it right back this morning, what it saw yesterday. But remember, on the lows, we were down in the low 12,000s. Yeah. And then the yield definitely.
Yield on the 10-year picking up, right?
Yeah. Bitcoin was down around 54,000 at one point. Yeah, that took off. So if it's non-correlated, it's pretty darn correlated because yesterday, the minute they said we're going to stay free and easy. That's a Dirk Bentley song, I think. Free and easy down the road they go right now, the Fed. And that definitely helped Bitcoin, and it's helping it this morning. And then we'll go we have the ability to go doot doot with GameStop and AMC Entertainment. That's like effectively adding a sixth name. We don't want to add too many. You know what I mean? Then it just becomes a stocks to watch. So we're gonna do it like that. Is that okay, Andrew? You're all right with that? You're not saying anything.
I'm good. I don't know if we have another stock to put in there, so I'm good with it for now.
You're good with it for now. Time will tell.
For now,
that's the thing about the news business. That hence new.
I know how much you hate taxes, Joe.
Oh, no,
so let
I don't
me tell
hate
you
taxes.
This news.
I hate doing my taxes. If I hate taxes, I certainly pay.
I certainly
pay a lot of them for someone who hates them.
Well, the IRS is postponing the tax filing deadline again this year. It's pushing it back from April 15th to May 17th. Now, the IRS commissioner said many people are having a tough time, and the agency wants to help taxpayers navigate these unusual circumstances related to the pandemic. But one warning, taxpayers should check to see if the due date for your state tax has been changed. This is important. Not all states follow the same filing deadline as the federal government. So it may very well be a situation where you're going to file federally, but you may file on the regular date in your own state. Go to your state website, find out. It's important. Bex?
And that's what I was going to point out, is if your state deadline is still April 15th, then forget it. By the time you do that, you might as well do both of them at the same time. For me, it's a matter of getting all the documentation together, putting it and compiling it. If you're going to do one, you might as well do both.
It's like homework. It's like a really big assignment. It's the one place where I still really procrastinate. And thank God I didn't use Bitcoin when I was getting my nails done or a pedicure. Now we know that you would incur a capital gain. So just luckily, I didn't do that. Some people have done. Are they really going to go back? People that got in early and decided, I'm going to use Bitcoin to pay for things. It's fun, things like that. Are they really going to go back and figure out every capital gain?
First of all, if you're using Bitcoin to buy a $69 million Beeple piece of art, the IRS is going to come find you. I mean,
right, for something like
and,
that.
But and what by the way, because Bitcoin is as valuable as it is, every purchase, unless you're using, small parts of a Bitcoin, are big. So the IRS is going to come find you.
No, you can use it's completely divisible, so you can use it to buy a pizza. But do I owe capital gains on the pizza?
You would.
It went from getting a slice to where I could get to where you could get about.
But as we know, so few Bitcoins are actually used as a currency. So I'm actually not worried.
But people
about this particular
for a while,
component
that,
of it.
For a while, a couple of years, remember, because I saw signs in a lot of places, like in around New Jersey. It was kind of fun to say, yeah, we accept Bitcoin for a little while. That the nail place that accepted is now a nail chain. I guess they accepted enough to where they've spread out. Not really, but anything they took in, obviously, they're like that NFL player, the former NFL player. He took half his salary, and it ended up being more than his whole salary, and he still had the other half. In dollars, so we'll see if that continues. I think.
Meantime, by the way,
Morgan Stanley.
Saw Morgan Stanley. One note on the Morgan Stanley news, which is, the headlines was Morgan Stanley effectively selling Bitcoin or not
but they
selling
said
Bitcoin
it's not currency, right?
Their clients. Well, they're not really interacting with Bitcoin itself. What they're doing is selling their clients parts of actually the Mike Novogratz's. Galaxy Digital funds. I think they might be involved with Grayscale funds, but you would get exposure to Bitcoin through other funds. You would not be getting, quote-unquote, direct exposure. For what it's worth. One other note on the tax front, for those of you who file taxes, but file estimated taxes and you do it quarterly, do check the websites again for that, because that also may be different this year as well. So. We have a lot of different viewers who have lots of different financial situations worth knowing.
Big news we like going to movies, not just at home. An update on reopening of movie theaters in America might be the fake butter on the popcorn. AMC said it plans to have 98% of its U.S. theaters open by tomorrow. 99% 99er open by March 26. Its California theaters have been among the last to reopen, but all 23 Los Angeles County locations will be operational by tomorrow. And seems early, doesn't it, to be, I don't know, I guess if you distance a little bit, high ceilings, ventilation maybe, but
ventilation's,
you know,
important.
Everything we do, we're going to think about when we do it, a stick in the toe back in the water. But if you so are so inclined to go see a movie on a big screen and some of that popcorn, you're going to be able to. So progress.
It's not just that. It's also Disney saying that their two California theme parks will reopen as well. That's going to happen on April 30th. The CEO, Bob Chapek, told CNBC that Disneyland and California Adventure would open at 15% capacity to start.
We've been operating at Walt Disney World now for about 9 months, and there certainly is no shortage of demand. I think, you know, as people become vaccinated, they become a little bit more confident in the fact that they can travel and, you know, stay COVID-free. That is showing up in our intent to visit our parks.
Chapek also said that Disney hopes to reopen its cruise line for business by the fall. But guys, you think about that, at 15% capacity, that is difficult to try and turn any sort of a profit. They must be operating at a loss just to get things back up and running, I would assume.
Yes. No fast track. You don't need a fast track, I guess, do you?
You don't need a fast track. That'd be amazing. You could probably fly right through.
This is good. This is what a tough business to be in. Remember Disney? Disney had all the things that were written before the pandemic. Man, they got it all. They got it all. And then suddenly, like, half of it was like, oh, my God, why do we have this? So this was a tough year. A tough year when you're trying to operate a... Obviously, that's pretty obvious that it has been tough. It's good to see it happening, though. But when do we get to 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% ever? Do we ever get back to those crowds you used to see? I don't know. A lot of masks.
Probably. I would say eventually you get back to those, like, 30, 40, 50%. I'd like to know what they're operating at in Orlando. Those parks, as he mentioned, have been open, as they have for Universal. And I don't know what the capacity availability is there. I know that for spring break, they were filled up to whatever level they're allowing, and they had sold out of the park.
Right. That's good.
I'm going to find out for you.
Yep. There is demand there. Yeah.
Shares of Williams-Sonoma are rising. The company said stay-at-home trends fueled better-than-expected sales. Consumers bought more furniture, cookware. Just bear with me during the pandemic. Earnings of $3.95 a share beat estimates by 56 cents. A pizza stone brought home a couple of days ago from Williams-Sonoma with that thing that goes in that you see the people in the pizza place used. It goes under.
Yes.
You put the pizza stone in.
Yep.
I just did this. You do it at 500 degrees. The oven, the stone heats up. It makes real pizza. It's not like crappy homemade pizza that isn't any good. And you go to a pizza place, they will sell you dough at a pizza place, and you can make as good a pizza as a brick oven pizza at home. That's all I'm going to say. And I've done it twice in like 4 days, which is a problem. Anyway, do you have one of those, Sorkin? Do you have one of those yet? Have you tried this?
I live in New York City, where we have the greatest pizza in the world, and we can have the pizza delivered in 5 minutes.
I know. I understand that.
I don't have the stone.
I mean, I understand it. Becky got the pizza. I'm just telling you, get one. I don't know how much it costs. But
I have one of the pizza scraper things now.
You do.
To get it out of the oven, yeah.
Put some flour
on. And a pizza cutter, like the round cutter thing.
It's a learning experience. At the very edges, get that really flat. Because if you leave, you know, you think you need to build up the edges, man, you get crust. It rises so much. So you don't do that. And also put flour on the stone. Otherwise, you never get it off the stone.
Chef Joe.
Can I just say, by the way, for those New Yorkers who know what I'm talking about, Shun Li, the greatest Chinese in all of New York, it had been closed down through all the pandemic. People thought it was never coming back. They just came back, and we just ordered there to celebrate. For those who know Shun Li, it's one of probably the most famous Chinese restaurant in New York City.
And that came
and
to
you,
back, too?
And they're
delivered?
Back in business, baby.
Delivered?
And they delivered.
That's strong.
It was a big, big day in the Sorkin household.
Next on Squawk Pod, outgoing Ulta CEO Mary Dillon in her exit interview and the beauty biz after COVID.
We offer products that are really great for self-care, like bath and fragrance and skincare and hair care. So we were able to pivot our marketing, and I feel like coming out of this, we're well positioned.
Plus a conversation on Dillon's legacy with Becky Quick, recorded exclusively for this podcast. She was very well liked by Wall Street.
Very well liked by Wall Street because of the momentum that she has and because of the constant evolution and change. I mean, she knows how to get to what the customers want and to get there no matter what.
All that right after this.
That's all straight ahead. I got my makeup ready.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Another day, another conversation you'll only find here on the pod, this time with Becky Quick. What are you singing?
That gummy bear song. You guys haven't heard it?
I don't know that song. And since this is a podcast, we couldn't see each other. In fact, not a lot of people see any of us these days. And when they do, we're masked. More than half our face incognito. So how's the makeup business? Well, still in business. Becky, we heard from Ulta CEO Mary Dillon today, who just announced she is stepping down from leading the company in June. When she came to the C-suite at Ulta in 2013, it was a very different company than what she's leaving. Tell me about how she's changed Ulta as a CEO.
Well, she's been a transformational CEO. I mean, think through the changes over the last 8 years. The company's market cap more than tripled over that time. She's doubled the number of stores. They've got more than 1,200 stores now. And it's not just the stores that are standalone stores. She's also got these new partnerships with places like Target, where they're going to be opening up stores within a store. In the time that she's been there, the company's joined the S&P 500 and the Fortune 500. And I think shareholder return has been greater than 245% over that period of time. So that's kind of a tour de force in terms of what she's done with the company.
245% is a shocking number. That's not normal for investors to expect, especially in a retailer. When the CEO transition announcement came, it came out after the bell last week when they also announced their latest quarterly earnings. The stock took a hit on the news. She was very well liked by Wall Street.
Very well liked by Wall Street because of the momentum that she has and because of the constant evolution and change. I mean, she knows how to get to what the customers want and to get there no matter what. They really flip-flopped a lot during the pandemic and made sure, they had to close all of their stores down. It was just about a year ago, I think tomorrow, that they had to close all their stores down, many of them for a number of weeks, some even longer. How do you operate when your business just dries up and goes away? How do you continue to operate? And if you look at the stock chart over the last year, it's been phenomenal watching it take off again.
It's interesting what we learn from CEOs about adaptability and pivoting and being flexible. Ulta is a great example of a company that really had to change what they valued. Curbside pickup, more stuff on e-commerce, figuring out ways for people to express themselves with beauty when they're wearing face masks for public health reasons. A lot of challenges were thrown at leadership there, and it's been pretty phenomenal to see how they've met those challenges and changed as a result.
Yeah, you got to listen to this interview because Mary at one point talks about what people really want in terms of making sure that they are accentuating the things you can see above the mask. And that hadn't even occurred to me, but it's true. You know, nobody's buying lipstick. You don't need it. Nobody can see your lips. But it's just a phenomenal story of what she's been able to do and drive that. And, you know, she started spending money on advertising because when she got there, people used to call it Ultra. I did too. I used to think it was Ultra Beauty until she really came in and ramped things up. But Katie, it was a surprise when I heard that news. It was Wall Street was surprised. And I emailed you as soon as I heard it too. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me?
And we're so thrilled that she came on the show to really give an exit interview and talk about her legacy and where she's leaving the company now.
Mary, it's great to see you here today. I have to say, surprise is probably an understatement. I was kind of shocked to hear you'd be stepping out of the CEO role. Why now?
Well, thank you, Becky. I'm so thrilled to be here. You know, first, I just feel the time is right. You know, succession planning is something that a board is accountable to. We've been planning this for some period of time. The business is very strong, emerging from 2020, really strong. Strong, differentiated business model. You know, our culture is really unparalleled with world-class leaders, focus on great execution. And, you know, we have a strong foundation to build from. And we've got a great leadership team ready to take off. So we've got a diverse, experienced team. I'm so excited. Dave Kimball is going to be the CEO and Keisha Steelman, the COO. So I just feel like we're ready. And then for me personally, it just feels like the right time. So I'm excited. I'm confident that our culture, our momentum is going to continue. And I'm excited to be the executive chair for a year.
Yeah. I have to say, there's been so much that has happened at the company on your watch. I used to think the name of the company was Ultra before you took over. That was one of the things building that brand.
I used to have to correct a lot of people about that. Listen, when I started running Ulta Beauty almost 8 years ago now, I knew that it was a diamond in the rough, I guess is what I would say. But the foundation of a business model that's differentiated. You know, we're in store. We have over 1,250 stores across the U.S., largely off mall. We sell a great assortment of products, unparalleled from mass to prestige in every category of beauty. Plus, we have services, all with a foundation of an amazing culture. Our associates are the best in the business, and the way that they treat our guests really shows.
What have you seen during the pandemic? Your stock took a hit, like just about every stock, at the beginning of this, because people thought you're not going to be able to go out and go to stores. You guys pretty quickly revamped and did a lot of digital shopping, bringing in tons of customers that way. Where do you see the consumer right now? What are you seeing in the stores? What are you seeing in terms of what people are willing to buy online?
Right. Well, you know, first I want to thank our associates at our stores, our distribution centers, and of course, our corporate headquarters as well. You know, 2020 for everybody was such a challenging year, but I'm proud of how we have emerged. We had to shut down all of our stores almost exactly a year ago. It's tomorrow for several weeks. Our distribution centers continued to operate and we met the guests where they were. And so, you know, the great thing is we offer products that are really great for self-care, like bath and fragrance and skincare and hair care. So we were able to pivot our marketing. Our stores reopened. Our distribution centers have been at peak, you know, operations, and we've met the guests where they are. And I feel like coming out of this, we're well positioned. I call it the roaring 2020s. I might not be alone in saying that, but we know that we need to be ready, and we will, for the guests to really come back strong. But even coming out of 2020, we feel the momentum for our business is great, and we're going to continue to be the leader in beauty retail. I would just add the partnership that we developed with Target. We developed that during 2020. Yeah. We're going to be launching that later this year in the fall. And we're thrilled. It's yet another great place for guests to have an experience, a really wonderful experience learning about Ulta Beauty inside Target. We know that's just another great way to have more points of presence for our guests and an exciting experience for both the Target shopper and the Ulta Beauty shopper.
Mary, how big of an advantage is it that your stores, for the most part, are outside of indoor malls? You're outside the malls, not in the malls. Like Sephora has a lot of stores in the malls.
Yeah, we're largely off mall, which is, you know, something that we continue to feel confident about the role of the brick and mortar store, as well as, of course, being a great omnichannel retailer. You have to do it all. But certainly through the pandemic, we went from having, you know, buy online, pick up in store already available to curbside. It's quite convenient in an off mall location, right, for a guest to come in and pick up their order. So we continue to see the role of both the store, which we're going to continue to build more stores for many years to come, as well as really ramping up our whole omnichannel capability. And I'm proud of how we've done that.
How have consumer tastes when it comes to beauty products changed during the pandemic? Were people doing more face masks and less makeup because they weren't going out? What did you see?
Well, certainly, again, it's great that we have a wonderful portfolio to offer to our guests. But it started with things like safety, of course, with self-care, you know, more time to learn about skincare, to put a bunch of new skincare routines into your procedure because you have more time at home, right? Makeup, yes, but more what we call above the mask, right? Eyes and brows and lashes. And we see that, you know, makeup in general is starting to, we know, is going to come back. It's just a matter of how long will it take, right? For people to be in a situation where they're not needing to wear a mask and in more social situations. You know, hair care has been really strong for us, fragrance. So I think the shopper for beauty has learned about self-care, learned about clean and organic ingredients, as well as, you know, trying new routines for above the mask. And we continue to see that growing.
I didn't even think about that. Above the mask, though, people just care about the eyeliner, the lashes, the brows, maybe not the blush and the lipstick so much. That's what you've seen?
I think we're seeing a lot of fun self-expression, and it's, and beauty is a wonderful way for that to happen. And the other thing I'm so proud about is that we really try to focus on bringing out the possibilities of beauty for everybody and meeting all of our guests in ways that, you know, from a guest who wants a more natural look to a guest who wants to really be an artist and explore, and we're seeing all of those looks come to life.
It sounds like you all have really pivoted and turned to what the consumer needed. But I guess what's the biggest challenge now as we're coming out of this, as maybe people start to get back to more pre-pandemic trends? What's the biggest challenge that you face at this point?
Well, I see more opportunity than challenge. I think for retail, you know, it's about being a great omnichannel retailer for sure. It's continued about safety, and it's also about get ready because the shopper, you know, I think the spending is going to continue to accelerate. Now, we're not sure when that's going to happen, so we're a little cautious for the first half of the year. But, you know, for us, again, because we meet the guests across many different categories and rituals, I think there's just, frankly, a lot of opportunity. But I would say there's uncertainty, right, about when we're truly, you know, going to be through the pandemic and when it's really safe for everybody to be together and to be in situations where they don't have to wear a mask all the time. And so we're pacing ourselves through those kind of challenges, but feel like very optimistic that, of course, we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I think everybody is.
Mary, one of the controversies we've seen recently is Teen Vogue, the new editor-in-chief there, getting some anti-Asian posts that were brought up from her past. I know as a result, you've stopped advertising there. Can you tell us any more about that? How long
advertising
stoppage might last?
Well, we don't know yet, but we absolutely stand against hate. And I think especially right now, there's so many challenges for the Asian American population in the U.S., obviously what's happened recently as well. And so what we're doing is just stepping back and assessing. And we'll determine what our next steps are after that. But really, Ulta Beauty is about inclusion. I mean, everything that we do is about meeting our guests, whatever, you know, age or race or gender or sexual orientation. You know, we're about a category and a brand that really meets everybody and brings people together and shows the possibilities of beauty. And so anything that is against that, that's really separating us, is something that we obviously can't support.
Mary, I want to thank you for your time this morning. And just again, point back at the huge gains the stock has made, the company has made under your watch. We really appreciate your time today, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.
I mean, I was listening closely about the makeup stuff, Sorkin. I know you were too. I have not actually purchased. You've never really bought your own, right, Andrew? I mean, it kind of gets supplied to us.
I ended up getting some.
I identify a little with that. I don't just ignore it and say, "Oh, it doesn't apply to me." I'll admit that. But I don't know good from bad or what colors I like or anything like that. You, Sorkin, you don't. Come on, do you?
C6, Mac C6, that's my color. Just telling you, that's what I know. I don't know much.
Well done,
that's,
Andrew.
That's what I know. I've learned over the years.
I mean, and now, because we're, you know, our people don't do it for us anymore. We all do our own, and Mac brings
my
me stuff.
My wife says I know more about makeup
clearly
than she does at this point.
When I get everything out that I need at the beginning and I look down at it, I just go, oh, my God, there's like 12 things. There's brushes. There's this. There's that. And I go through this procedure, and I'm pretty damn good at it, I think, now. Although I think, you know, some people say I wear too much. This is all TMI.
Next on Squawk Pod, NFTs and millions of dollars. A blockchain brain trust or a growing bubble?
Manufactured digital scarcity worked for Bitcoin, but the buck stops here. NFTs are a joke.
CNBC's John Fort with both sides of the NFT story right after this.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work.
impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block. Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, are having a big moment as fashion, sports, and arts worlds embrace blockchain technology. But are NFTs for real, or is this the latest sign of a bubble, an overhyped market? John Fort joins us now with more on the other hand. John, what do you think?
Andrew, have you ever heard of anything crazier than spending $200,000 on a video of a dunk that anybody on earth can look at on YouTube? I have. Paying $500,000 for a house that doesn't exist in real life. And that's before we even get to the $69 million art sale last week. And that's where this NFT stuff has brought us. And look, we should not be surprised. We're living in a WandaVision economy. We got super low interest rates that are supposed to encourage people to take risks. And now people are using inflated cryptocurrencies to inflate new markets in crypto art and crypto collectibles. Layers of self-reinforcing invented reality. Here's the reason why this NFT stuff is nonsense. The beauty of digital technology is its ability to eliminate scarcity. When we value something digital, we make copies, backups, that we see as the same as the original. Manufactured digital scarcity worked for Bitcoin, but the buck stops here. NFTs are a joke.
Okay. Okay. So you're on the joke side. That's what you believe. So 5 years from now, we'll be looking back on NFTs as a bubble reaching extraordinary high levels, just like tulip bulb mania back in the 1600s?
Well, Andrew, on the other hand, there's more to NFTs than digital files and hype. Take the NBA Top Shot highlight videos. Sounds crazy at first, right? But what are baseball cards except for pictures of athletes created with artificial scarcity? And today we experience player moments through video clips more than photos, so it makes sense to have a licensed collector's version. And the purchase of Beeple's piece for $69 million, not as crazy as it seems once you understand why the buyer did it. Yes, it was partly about the art itself, but it was also a crypto capitalist strategically using his inflated currency to do what VCs have largely failed to do over the last 5 years. And that sparked the mainstream imagination for what blockchain can actually do for markets beyond currency speculation. And that person succeeded. So, yes, there are some crazy NFT pitches out there, but NFTs are just digital paperwork, and they're the future. They'll be used as one of many tools to authenticate all kinds of high-end items and experiences, both digital and physical.
Okay, John, I have one very important question. I've been digging into this NFT thing in a big way in the past couple of days.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that one of the big issues is that effectively you're buying access to a code that runs through a gateway online. If the gateway, effectively the website, goes down, I'm oversimplifying here, but if it's the only gateway there, you've lost whatever you just bought.
Well, it depends on what the NFT is backing. So it really is just digital paperwork. They're going to have to be kind of audits of how good different organizations are at issuing these NFTs. And some of these NFTs are going to back physical items. It's really a way of, I think, making high-end purchases, unique purchases, viable online.
All right. Okay. John, much more. We got to keep debating this one.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've already done that, send us a tweet at @SquawkCNBC. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.